Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm your co-host Angela, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Conversation with AA. Today is April 16, 2023. This evening, we will be discussing Heal the Inner Child to Move into Your Greatness with a special guest, Lisa T. Hayes. Please follow us on IG and Twitter at Conversation with AA. If you're interested in being a guest on the show or have any topics or videos you want us to discuss, contact Avon at 347-460-2813, or you can email us with your request to conversationwithaa@gmail.com. So to stay connected to our future shows and the changes that we are currently making, please follow us. All right, we're going to get into it tonight. Heal the inner child to move into your greatness. Many of us, we carry scars from our childhood emotional wounds, neglect or abuse that can manifest in our adult life as unhealthy habits, relationships, or patterns of negative behavior. But the good news is that we can learn to recognize, heal, and integrate those wounds through a process of deep self-understanding and compassion. In tonight's series, we want to offer a supportive and transformative environment for all those willing to explore their inner child wounds with kindness, curiosity, and courage. You'll get to hear inspiring stories and learn practical tools and a journey of healing childhood trauma. This show tonight is not only for healing the inner child, but for those who have lost hope and feel there's no end in sight or don't see no light at the end of the tunnel. So tonight, once again, our show is Heal the Inner Child to Move into Your Greatness. I'm your co-host, Angela, and I have your host with me tonight, Avon. Hello, Avon. How are you?
Hi, Angela. I am well. How are you doing yourself?
I'm doing fine. I'm kind of emotional today about this show because a lot of people have been reaching out to me. And as a life coach, I get to hear so many traumatic stories about people, and just how they – I'm always intrigued on how people regroup from different traumas and events of pain that took place in their life. So I'm always, it's a very, when I hear these stories, sometimes I get emotional as well. And our guest, and I would like to introduce our guest, she has a very inspiring emotional story as well, but it's more so inspiring. And I just say emotional because, sometimes when people tell their stories, you can feel the energy that they in the heartwarming spirit that they put behind it. So, they put into it. You understand? So once again, this show, I look forward to it, and it deals with all kinds of trauma, trauma, emotional wounds, neglect, abuse, toxic relationships, and we just need to address the situation with, self-compassion and understanding, awareness. And we look forward tonight to help our listeners just start thinking in a different state of mind, to be mindful of this and of your journey of inner peace. So, yes, Avon, I look forward to
you know, I do too. You're absolutely right. And, this isn't our first time because you and I have these discussions all the time. We've been doing this for years and we've been noticing the trauma that people feel. You see it every day. You hear it in the news. You hear personal stories. We experience it ourselves. And, and we have been doing shows tapping into that right there. We're hopefully on this journey because that's what we say, that we're on a journey and, we're not at the end of it yet. And as we go along, we want to share what it is that we know and what we have experienced, and we want to bring in guests that can also help, to get the message out and to help heal people, because to me, I see a lot of people hurting. I see a lot of people that are traumatized. And we know, as you know, with our past guests, look, we had the prison doctor, Myron Fontaine, on here, and he experiences the trauma daily with children and how they are traumatized and what have you, you know. And then he goes into these homes on a regular basis, and he gets to experience that. But he sees the connection to how it happened, and then it goes, these kids are feeling this trauma, and they're feeling this disconnect from what's going on outside their environment and right in the home with their parents. And a lot of times the parents are traumatized, and they feel paralyzed, and they don't know how to help their kids. So then he has to come in. They call him in, and then he does things like that. We had Brother Larry Muhammad on, you know, and he works, you know, with folks through the youth as well, and as with adults. So he has a lot going on. And, you know, we will deal with the nation, all people from all walks of life, because our series, Men, How Are You Showing Up in the Neighborhood? Men are a part of this. Women are a part of this. We're all in this together. So if we think that we can, you know, do this and we're separate and apart, then we are lost from the start. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to this, to hear Lisa's take on what's going on and, you know, what are some of the things that we can do. So I'm ready to get to it. Yeah.
You know what? You mentioned something before we get into it. You mentioned something, our series. And I definitely want us to, you know, our listeners to, you know, stay tuned and go to our, you know, go to our pages. Go to our IG and Twitter page right now at Conversation with AA. Take 5 minutes out, 2 minutes. It's going to take 2 minutes and just get connected with us, because we're going to have a lot of great shows coming up. And one of the theories that we have is, Black men, how are you showing up in your community? Okay, because we get to see, you know, on the news how they like to tell our stories. But we want the men in our community to start showing up and telling their stories. Sometimes these men are not heard of, and they're not, you know, you only get on the news if you're doing something negative. So we want that positive energy to be exposed with our Black men. So yeah, we have that series, and that we that's an ongoing series for us. So let's get right into it, guys. Once again, my name is Angela. I'm your co-host tonight, and we have Avon, host. My show is Heal the Inner Child to Move into Your Greatness. We have a special guest, Lisa Torrey Hayes. Now, I was going to tell her a little bit of her story, but I'm just going to give you the basics of her. It's not really basics. It's someone that has been through it. And has and going through an exceptional journey right now. So I'll let her tell you her story, but right now I'm just going to give you the background of her. Lisa Torrey Hayes was currently a South Bronx special educator for first and third grade students with moderate to severe disabilities. She is obtaining her second master's degree, a Master's of Science in Special Education with a specialization in moderate to severe disabilities at Hunter College School of Education. Okay, so I'm going to bring Lisa on, and she's going to tell you the rest. Lisa was born, like I said, in the South Bronx, and at the tender age of 9, she has an interesting story from that at that point on. But let's just get her on and bring her on. I'm going to put her on now. Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm well. Good evening, Angela. Good evening.
Thank you for being on Conversation with A&A, Angela and Avon. So we appreciate you definitely for showing up tonight's show. And I'm just going to begin to ask you about your journey. Can you tell us a bit about your healing journey and what led you to seek out healing? What was that first moment that you would really say that you started on your healing journey?
Yes. So good evening, everyone listening. Thank you all for joining as well. I would say, Angela, that my healing journey began very young. You know, to heal something usually is broken. So unfortunately, my brother, Daryl Hayes, mm-hmm. who was a bright, young, beautiful, happy, vibrant soul at 16, unfortunately was murdered by another young black man. And there was really no gang violence or no drug incidents, not to say that anybody deserves that. For whatever reason, nobody deserves to be murdered. But it was simply because he had thrown an egg, and the egg hit another gentleman who was only 21 at the time. And he came back wanting to have a little bit of a fist fight. My brother defended his friend and did have a fist fight and didn't hurt the young man bad at all. But unfortunately, this was 20 years ago, much like today. It's hard to have a fight without somebody coming back with a gun. And so the man came back and shot my brother, murdered him, unfortunately, and shot his friend as well.
Wow. And, you know, as a mother, he was 9. Wow. Okay. 9. Mm-hmm. Wow. So I know that was very emotional for you at that time. How did you find out about it? Like, you know, did you get a call?
Unfortunately, it was a Sunday. He was murdered on a Sunday afternoon, so we were all home. And so repping the North Bronx. I love the South Bronx. My mother came and raised happily from there. But we were in the North Bronx, and unfortunately, it was right up the block. So his friend, one of his best friends, came and told us. And we answered the door to find out. Unfortunately, my brother had been shot. Thankfully, as my mother would say, he didn't die on the street. He was taken into a hospital, thank God, but they weren't able to save him, which I imagine is all of what I believe has all been a part of God's plan.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, and how is your mother healing from that? How is your mother doing? You know, how did she, you know?
Mm-hmm. So my mother and father, thankfully, are still together. They have been together for 37 years. Right? That's hard to do these days.
Man,
but
that's a blessing. That's a whole nother show. Lisa, we got to have your parents
you
on the show next time.
Okay.
37
what
years.
You say?
People can't stay in relationships for a year.
right. And then you add on the fact that their son was murdered, right? And so statistics say that usually people don't make it through that as a couple, as a family. For death in itself, I think we can all agree, can do quite a bit, a lot to someone, right? To the ones who are still living.
Okay.
And so they... and I, thankfully at 9, but on their backs, were very intentional about beginning to heal. Over 20 years, it looked different and changed, but initially it started with advocacy. And that was making sure that our voices were heard, that my brother was more, Daryl Javon Hayes was more than just a number. Yes, right, that his story mattered, and also fighting against gun violence. And so that helped a part of healing for us, because we wanted to make sure and tried our best, even though 20 years later this gun violence and violence itself is still very rampant, we wanted to try our best to do our part in that point of our healing to stop.
Okay.
And gun violence.
Right. Now, let me ask you, I've seen that, you know, you have a very extensive, impressive bio. And I just wanted to, I cut it down a little bit because, well, a lot, because I wanted you to tell your story. But at what age did you become the member of Mothers Against Gun Violence, the Bronx chapter?
Right. Yes. So at that point, I was the youngest member. I was 9. Because my brother was murdered that age, my mother and father were very active, particularly my mother, in fighting, right? As we would call it, fighting, but fighting for advocacy. We tried very hard to get a bill passed. My mother was able to sit down with the now called Hasty, and we we weren't able to bring it to the fore, but in essence, the bill was going to help identify people who are out on murder for murdering people, much like the sex offenders, right? Because though the young man wasn't a murderer who killed my brother then, he had been out on probation in December and he killed my brother that February. All of that was such a big part of starting to advocate. And so not only did we do Mothers Against Gun Violence, we were very heavy marching and going up to Albany and spent a number of days in people's offices and our elected public officials to 20 years later, they know all of us, my mother, father, and I very well on a first name basis. But that was the beginning of that part of our journey and healing. As I grew into my adulthood, I began to start advocating on my own, became a part of my journey.
Let me ask you this. On your journey, right? Because we all had, a lot of us we have suffered some type of trauma or whatever. So now you're going through this trauma happened to you, right? And then you're 9 years old, and then you have to, not only that, you have to deal with school, you still have to deal with friends, you have to deal with your advocacy, and that could be a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What has been the most challenging aspect of that healing journey so far?
For me, as a child, you are very much, unfortunately, our Black children don't a lot of times experience it. But our goal, I believe, as parents and adults is to allow children to make the world feel like Disney World, right? That they might be able to believe in a tooth fairy, that they might be able to see the simple lives and simple things, joys, right? And I believe that, unfortunately, when children experience trauma of any kind, in a deep-rooted trauma, right? Like we're talking violence, rape, all these things, unfortunately, that children in our inner cities and my own very own communities and outward experience, it rips off the innocence.
Okay.
Right?
Wow.
And so
okay.
Because of that, you are now navigating a world where you see things and people for who they are. And while as you grow older, it's a blessing because I would call it discernment. But as a child, it's a lot, right? Because you're now exposed to a different world that many of your friends will never know, right? There's a different level of pain. And having also dealing with children of trauma, I also know that they can begin to learn how to mask things, right, in such a way because even children don't often want other people to feel the same pain that they do.
Wow.
And so,
Lisa, may I ask you something? Oh,
yes.
I'm sorry. I just want to ask you something because when you said that, and what you're saying now is very important because you said you began advocacy at the age of 9. So how did you understand that at that time? What was your understanding at the age of 9 and as far as being an advocate, did you truly understand it, or where was your mind in at that point? And then, because you said later on that you went on to advocate by yourself, so what was going on at the age of 9 for you?
Yeah, so at the age of 9, I very much did understand, and I guess that's also the awakening of having your innocence ripped away, right? Because you're no longer thinking as a young child as much as a child who has not gone through trauma. And so while many children my age may have been thinking about Barbies and dolls and toys and things, my parents were very good in providing all those things, but my mindset was on how am I going to change the world, believe it or not. I decided at a very young age, I was always passionate about change, but it definitely, at 9, was the thing that was the catalyst, right? And so it allowed me, if we're going to be real, when you're often traumatized, there's a pain and sometimes, many times, anger that comes with that, right? And so even as mm-hmm. a child, we experience. And so there needs to be, and it had to be a way for me to get that energy and passion out. And that was one way. But my parents were also very deliberate. My community, my friends, my family, the people who love me were also very deliberate about many times coming to support us, many times reaching out and calling and just making sure we felt that close, if that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Do you think that's why you and did that your with your brother played a role for you being in childhood special education now?
Yeah, so Daryl, of who he is, the joy and the happiness he brings was always something that I always wanted to keep, right? That is something my mother, when people joke that she could be a comedian, my father, very quiet but happy. And so his joy is something I've always wanted to keep with me. However, through healing, my career has also been a part of my healing. And so prior to becoming an educator, I worked as a community leader and coordinator for the Department of Youth and Community Development, right? And directly helping to bring resources from the federal government to the city and helping people to learn how to do that. And then prior to that, I was an assistant director for a Liberty Partnerships program, ran out of Bronx Community College, the New York State Education Program for youth from 6th to 12th grade who are at risk of not graduating. And so lent my talents there and learned a lot there. And prior to that, worked as the Bronx District Attorney's first ever U visa coordinator, in which I helped immigrant people who were newly immigrated who unfortunately had been affected by crime obtain U visas. And prior to that, I was a paralegal aide in the New York City Law Department, especially for litigation, working on the behalf of officers and correction officers. I guess, I know that was a lot, but I say all that to say that a part of my healing has been through my career. And so I've done my best to lend to the places where I believe can affect the most people and, if I'm being honest, people who look like me and people who may have had trauma as well. And so that I wanted, I have always done. And so after 10 years of being in community development, advocacy, and law, God had set it on my heart to go for it. I believe he had put it in me for a long time to be an educator, always educated in one form or another. However, he put it on me, and I applied for a program, and ever since this is my first official year as a special education teacher. And, yes, I do believe that all of these things, all my careers and jobs thus far have been a direct relation to my healing and making myself whole and my community whole as a part of that.
Okay. You know, Think and Grow Rich, they talked about transmutation, but when they were talking in the book, they talked about sexual energy, like how you transmutate your sexual energy. But what I'm seeing that you can also transmute your trauma, your discomfort, and I'm seeing that, and you and I spoke about that before. I see how you transmute. Okay, that you took, because you have done a lot. Okay, and like I said, with your bio, it was like, wow, okay, where do I start? Because it was so much. And now that I'm even listening to you more clearly and more deeply, you took that pain and you took all of that and you just put it into everything that you was doing, okay, from the point that you found God at the age of 16. And we're going to talk about that as well. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you took that, like a lot of people, they don't know how to transmute that pain, and it comes in the form of drugs, broken relationships, you know, maybe prostitution or sleeping around with, you know, a lot of people, whether you're a man or a woman, because it's so painful, and no one ever taught them how to transmute that energy. So definitely that was interesting. Now you found your support and resources through your family, right? How did and I know you touched on that a little bit. Can you just give us some more give the listening audience some more insight of that?
Mm-hmm. So it was my family, it was my community, and I have to give credit where credit is due. At the time, it was the Bronx District Attorney's Office. There was a beautiful young lady, she is now, her name is Dawn Wright. She has a not-for-profit called Girl Vows, and at that time, she was our crime victim.
I'm sorry, what's the name of that organization?
Oh, Girls Vow, so G-I-R-L-S-V-O-W. So she was our crime victims advocate, and as you all know, unfortunately, while we are supposed to have speedy trials, it's not necessarily the case. And so she had been with us from the time my brother was murdered and throughout the trial. And through the DA's office, crime victim advocate unit, they were very intentional about getting us resources, but I will also give credit to our own selves that we were intentional about taking them. And I just want to be honest and say that it is still something I'm working on, but asking for help and also receiving help, especially as you're going through trauma, it is a lot. It can be very scary and daring because it means trust, and that is hard when you've been through trauma. But I will say that when there's an intentionality there, God will send people to support you and help you. You have to be open and willing to take the help and seek it. If you seek it, it is as simple sometimes as a Google search. You'll be surprised what may pop up for you. So I received many of my resources because they offered them and we took them. And then we were intentional about seeking them out, as I said. So we look for support groups, right? My mother was intentional about getting me into therapy, about getting us as a family into therapy, right? And if I'm honest, sometimes my father didn't go, but there was still an offer there. There was still a space there for us to do so. And that also was really a big part of getting resources and seeking them. Yeah.
That's good. So I'm sorry. Go ahead. Well, just one more thing. So basically, the just being able to accept some support and resources have gotten you through, not just being by yourself, feeling alone. So what I'm hearing, you didn't feel alone. Okay,
grief and trauma, is there just going to be some times, as we know,
right,
whether you're grieving sickness or illness, you're going to be alone. And that is sometimes when you're going to have to deal with the hardest things, right? But I believe there's also, and you have to be intentional about getting support in a group and getting support from people you love. And you're going to sometimes have to reach out and tell people, I need help. And maybe the help that you need may not be from a friend. Maybe you need somebody who has a clinical degree. Maybe you need somebody who has been coaching or mentoring people, because that can make all the difference. So you have to not only be willing to accept it, but you have to kind of look for it.
Something, yeah, Angela, well, I'm gonna do one of your numbers right now. Lisa, you said many things that are very important, and I just want to point that out to make sure our listeners heard these things. You said something that just immediately stuck out to me. You said that it's an ongoing process, and you still, you still have times that you go through it and things like that, but you're aware of it, and it's an ongoing process. And that's what I want our listeners to hear and see. No matter how educated you are, how what's the word I had in you out of my head, but how much accomplished that you may be, no matter where you are in life, where you find yourself, we experience things. It's a journey. It doesn't just end, okay, I got over this, and then that's it. There's an ongoing journey, and you will always be learning. You can always feel. So It's an ongoing process. So people shouldn't feel that, oh, well, I don't have this, so there's no point of me even trying, or it's, no matter what you do, it's ongoing. So I just wanted to mention that, you know, and
yeah,
that really stood out to me.
I appreciate that. And if I would start, like, yeah, right now I'm highly educated, absolutely. But I want to also say that I started with an associate's degree to every young person out there that, not an older person, right? I believe there's never a time to stop learning. And every day you get to get up and decide to do something different if that's what you want to do. And it is a process, right? It's been 21 years since my brother was murdered. It's been 2 years since my grandmother, my other grandmother is four, right? And we feel these things. We know these things. I will say, in any kind of trauma, we are always trying to heal to get closest to whole for ourselves. But we should also know that sometimes that pain may never go away, but it will subside. You will be able to control it. And you might even get so good that you will let it be the thing that motivates you, that changes you, that maybe it will be the thing that you will begin to prosper from. So it is a journey every day. I pray, I get better, I thank God. But we have our weak moments. I definitely can curse you out just as nice on a bad day, right? So I'm no saint, Lord Jesus. God, know that. I don't even know why you picked me some days. But I do know that if you continue with your healing, you'll be well.
I say.
You know, you mentioned something about, I believe that too. I believe that the trauma that we go through is our life purpose and is our role to not only helping ourselves, is to help others. That's what I'm talking about, transmutation. So,
yeah.
You know, you went through something through your life and you're going through something. And it's like, that is the very thing that you need to heal from so you can help others to heal as well. So yeah, that's a signal of your life purpose. Because we had a show 2 weeks ago, we had two episodes of healing, finding your life purpose. And a lot of times, you know, going through the journey of trauma, it is, that's what God wants you, I believe that's what God wants you to help others with. And sometimes when you went through that, you're able to help others in a more sincere way. Instead
mm-hmm.
of just, you know, talking about it, you was that. You was
mm-hmm.
that trauma. You was that inner child that was hurt. You was that, you know, that broken person, you know. So it brings on another type of effect on that, you know, another type of energy, a more sincere energy. So mm-hmm. So basically, are there any particular healing practices that have been most helpful to you?
Yeah.
Or modalities, or, you know, that has been been really helpful to you?
Yes. So first I'll say prayer, right, first and foremost. God as a little girl, but I found God at 16. Even better, God found me in a real way. And there, even since then, there has been no perfect walks in my journey. Nevertheless, as everybody listening, religion can sometimes get muddy, and people can make you feel bad by trying to do right by God. So I've learned to have a personal relationship with God, to do what I can the way I can, and being connected in my Bible. And so prayer and scripture keeps me. Excuse my language, when all hell starts to break loose, I get to praying and I pray. There's no shame in my game. I pray whenever, wherever, however. I'd have been good and rotten up for praying, right? But I'm okay with that because I know God provides. And that has truly helped me to stay on my healing journey. I've learned to meditate. I've learned self-care, right? And I'm still working on that. That's also a process. But self-care for me was and is eating correctly, more than anything, making sure the things that I'm putting in my body is helping me to continue on, because I need to be whole inside and out. And keeping my peace. And so for that, lastly, that means when I know that something is too much for me, a situation, a person, an attitude, I've learned to keep my peace and walk away. And so those are some of the things that I've held on to that has helped me and continuously helps me on my journey.
Yes, yes. And, you know, Lisa, they say trauma has something to do with their health, that if you can heal your trauma, you can heal your health.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A lot of sicknesses, cancers, diabetes, just come from a lot of unhealed emotions and traumas in our life. So, yeah, that's,
right.
I'm glad you mentioned
yeah.
that. So, once again, I just want to say tonight's show, we'd like to thank all the listeners that have tuned in. Please, we want you to be encouraged to call in because eventually we're going to go to the phone lines and just ask questions. I'm your co-host, Angela, and I'm here with your host, Avon, and we have our special guest tonight, Lisa T. Hayes, and our call-in number is 515-605-9322. Our show tonight is Heal the Inner Child to Move into Your Greatness. Once again, with special guest Lisa T. Hayes. So hit those phone lines. And you know what? I see chats coming in on my phone and other places. I just can't tonight. We're working on a platform that you guys could just we'll see all the chats come in, and I hope you'd be just as encouraged to use that chat, the new chat line, as you are now. So I will take one question, and one question only. Someone asked, did the murderer of your brother was ever captured?
Yes, I'm so thankful, and God has blessed us that he was captured.
Okay.
He has serving 45 years to life, 25
okay.
for my brother. Yeah, 20 for the young man he shot, and then 5 years for the probation because he was on probation. And I do have a documentary that talks a lot about healing. It's called Beyond Punishment. And it is literally about healing and not just in this country, but what happens after people go to jail and how that healing happens, not only for the family, but the people incarcerated. But thank you. I appreciate the question. I do.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned you have a documentary about Beyond Punishment. Is that a documentary that you and your family put together?
So actually it's a documentary that we were a part of for about 6 or 7 years, so it followed us through our life for quite a bit. The gentleman, his name is Herbertus, is from Europe, and he came over because he had started learning some other stories of people, unfortunately, how their family members were murdered. But punishment in different places of the world are very different. And so he followed many of us, maybe about 4 or 5 families, throughout their journey of healing and what happens after the person is punished or not when they're affected by crime and particularly murder.
Okay. Okay. There's so many questions, so much. Okay. Did you and your family ever forgive those who, the accuser, you know, the person who got who murdered your brother?
Yeah. So forgiveness for that, even 21 years later, is something I'm still working on. Right. I pray and I give that to God daily.
Right.
But I can also say that there is a part of me who has forgiven him because I'm no longer holding on to the same kind of anger that I once had when Daryl was first
murdered.
That's
understandable. Right. That's understandable. And thank you for your honesty. That is that's very honest of you. How did your healing journey affect your family and your friends and family members?
It was hard, right? I think for all of us, one thing we also all have to remember is that we all have gone through trauma of some sort sometime. And so while my brother death affected me as a brother. It affected my mother, father, different, his friends and family. And so there was an understanding that had to be done around everybody. But there was, for the people who are still in my life and the family members who were there, there was a grace and support. And I'm very thankful for that. Then there was some who didn't understand it, because there are going to be people that don't always understand your trauma, because your healing may not take a year. As we said, it's a process. And sometimes people are not able to stand through that process. That doesn't make them bad, right? But it just is what it is. But also that's a part of healing, because when God puts you at the next place, you'll know who's able to get through that with you.
Now, when you said that some people is not going to be able to understand what you give us an example of what that looks like. Okay, so they in your life, but you went through certain things and they wasn't able to understand it. I hope I'm asking the right question, but I know what
no,
I'm
I
trying to ask.
Yeah,
but,
no, I get what you're
okay.
going. Yeah. So somebody may, okay, for instance, us going to marches, for the first year, maybe for people it's fun to come out and march with you and have up the sign. But in the 10th year, it's not as fun, right? And so somebody mm-hmm. may not understand why I'm still doing this. Many people don't understand why I've stepped into the classroom. But I believe God has called me, and I believe that there's somebody or something that I'm going to deter from happening, right? But people may not understand this part of my journey, and I'm not mad at that, right? But that's an example that mm-hmm. they may not be able to stand with you through the whole thing. They may not be able to support you in some of the places. If God forbid somebody is raped, they may not be able to go with you to the rape group. It may be too much for them. They may not be able to sit through an AA meeting with you, no point intended, because it's too much for them, right? And so that doesn't mm-hmm. make them a bad person. It just means that they're not able to support you on this part of your journey.
So, Lisa, mm-hmm. let me ask
well,
you this. I want to build on what Angela had asked you earlier. So in the initial stages of when you started the healing process and you worked with your family and friends and, you know, different people, now as the years have gone by and you become trained professionally and then your experiences and your walk with God, would you practice another way? Would you go back in and address the situation another way that can help your people even more so? I guess the question that I'm asking, have you noticed a change in you with all of these, you know, extra experiences and things added on to you?
Yeah, I think anybody who knows me, I'm sorry, I apologize.
I'm finished. No, go ahead.
Okay. I guess that question did excite me, right? Anybody who knows me, even from as a teenager, shout out to my Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated sister, especially Ada Omega Omega, right? When I was 16, I went through a group and where they mentored me. And my mentor will tell you right now, all of them, that I'm not the same person at 16 that I am now. And though I've always been on the healing journey, a part of that, there was a lot of anger. And there was a time where I would react a lot differently than prayer, right? And so people who knew me then and know me now can see that with the intentionality of God that I put into learning God and having a relationship, into myself and education, into community service, into family, into friends, that there is, I would say, a transformation, right? Because change is temporary. But there has been a transformation in me and my life, and that is shown, as the Bible says, by my work. So, yes, I do believe.
Wow. Wow. That's beautiful.
Avon, you have more questions?
Continue, go ahead.
Yeah. Now, have there been any, what was the most significant breakthrough or moment during, or revelation during your healing journey?
That's good.
It starts with me. That nobody can heal me outside of God but me.
Say that again. That was deep.
Yes.
Say that again.
It starts with me.
Can you repeat that?
It starts. Mm-hmm. My healing starts with me. nobody outside of God can heal me but me. Now, people can help mm-hmm. me with my healing, and thankfully I've had that. But if you okay. are not intentional and if you don't decide to heal, it don't matter what nobody offer you. It's not going to happen.
Okay. So that was your breakthrough. That was your aha moment.
That was my aha moment. That note okay. that it's not going to happen with everybody else. Like, I have to be like, okay, like, I want to feel better. I'm going to feel better. If I got to read scripture every day, I'm gonna change this anger. I'm going to change this pain. I'm going to feel the joy that I know God gives, right? And so, yeah, that was for me. Like, I had to do it.
Okay, so you know what? Let's stay there. Stay there. Okay, so then for clarity's sake, so our listeners can hear. So my question is, who is responsible for getting this healing for you? And then you had just said it. So for clarity's sake, who's responsible for getting the healing for you?
Self, yourself, me, Lisa T. Hayes was responsible. Whoever's listening is responsible for themselves. But it's a good responsibility, right? Because I think investing in yourself is you can't get a greater return, right, outside of your children. So, yeah, it's about self, and you have to want to do it, and you have to do it. And something is moving to be on my heart, so I have to say this. No, Angela, you mentioned something earlier. A lot of times that when people are going through trauma, it shows up in different ways, right? And drugs, sex, whatever it is, violence, right? You know, hurt people, whatever it may be. But
Lisa?
I want to also say,
Lisa, we
right,
couldn't hear you.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you repeat that? Yeah, we can hear you
yeah.
now, so you have to repeat.
No problem. Okay. I was saying that what was on my heart was you had mentioned earlier a lot of times when people go through things, their way of not healing but dealing, right, is sometimes through sex, drugs, whatever, another outlet that often is not the best. I will say that, though, if you find yourself in these spaces, that even in that begins your intentionality in healing, because somewhere in you, you recognize that that's not what you want to do. And so even if you're in that space, give yourself a little pat on the back. If you recognize tonight or whenever that that's no longer the space you want to be in, because even that is a shift in the mindset. So I just want to say that.
Right. Mindset shift, right? A shift in the mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Right now, I have a couple more questions, but I think I want to go to the boards right now, and you know, just to hear, you know, hear from some other people, you know, just to hear from them. Once again, you're listening to Conversations with AA. We're discussing tonight heal the inner child to move into your greatness with special guest Lisa T. Hey, you have any questions that you would like to ask her directly, you can call in tonight, right now. Dial those numbers, 515-605-9322. And please take your time and just go to Instagram and Twitter and connect with us at Conversation with AA. So,
sorry, I stepped
hello?
On my cat. Yes.
Okay,
sorry,
that's all right. Yeah, I heard. I was like, I was hoping you was okay over there, you know. I don't have no location and couldn't, you know, send nobody to help you. I'm glad. Is the cat okay?
Yeah, I'm a little heavy, but he all right. He okay.
Okay. That's good. Well, I would like to just ask you just these two questions, and then we're going to open the lines. What advice would you give someone who is starting out on their healing journey?
I think I would start by just saying, take a deep look into yourself. And I know sometimes that can sound real corny, but really sit down and figure out where it started, like where the pain that's hitting you the deepest really started. And you'll probably find yourself back to childhood. And when you start to really dig deep, then you can start to deal with the issues. And for some people, it may look like writing. If you're in music, it may look like writing out your song or typing it out or whatever it may. I would not say post it because it's not necessarily anybody's business. But I would say to try to explore what is the trauma that has led you to your now healing journey.
Okay. What are some of your future goals right now that you have for yourself or, you know, as you continue on your healing journey?
Yeah, so I do enjoy teaching. I will probably be teaching for a couple more years, but I also will continue to consult, and I will be starting a not-for-profit for children. And essentially, it is bringing joy back to children, right? That innocence that I talked about being ripped away, helping to kind of restore that for children who look like me and in my neighborhood. And God willing, I will be able to spread my mission throughout the world.
Right. So I know you are very aware of the current state of our youth with shooting and killing right now. Are you active in that whole fight right there?
Yeah, well, I try to stay very active. I sit on my community board. I try to stay abreast. Always and going to all kind of council meetings and just really staying with my ear to the ground and also really doing the real work. Not that that's not real work, but talking to youth when I see them, right? And I want to also say that to people that don't be afraid when you do see a young person who may look intimidating because of how media has put them out or unfortunately, maybe because their clothes look similar to somebody who has committed some state of violence. But I would say to talk to the youth. And that's also the kind of work that I do, Angela, is really talking to people and young men and young women especially. I mentored for many years because it's one thing to march after, but there's a whole other thing about being proactive before it starts. And so that has also been a part of my goal, especially even that in the classroom.
Okay. Wow. That's interesting. That's interesting. Okay. I know I keep saying I'm going to the lines and the chat. Just one more thing with this chat. Yeah, not, please, just call in. Please call in. And I'm trying to, okay. So Lisa, I know you said that so basically I'm just going to go to the phone line because I know that you have to go and we'll continue being on here, but can you just take like one or two callers if we have it?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So we're gonna go to the line right now. We have caller 856-625-4171.
Just the last four digits. Be careful.
Please stop me. Last four digits 4171. I'm so sorry. Last four digits 4171. Caller, please state your name, city, and state you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Brother Abdul. I'm from the state of New Jersey, Lindenwall, New Jersey. And how's everybody?
Everybody's fine.
We're fine.
That's good. See, I can't speak on childhood too much because I didn't have a bad childhood. I put my parents through a bad adulthood more than anything, so I was a mess for them, you know. And I know the tragedy of losing people because I lost a lot of friends coming up because of gangs and guns and, you know, I was involved with all that stuff. And how a person heals, each person heals differently, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people that lost brothers, you know, to gang violence, and everyone that I lost was part of gang violence. I mean, it wasn't, they was an innocent person. You know, when I came up, I don't know of no innocent person that lost their life, you know, through no gang violence or gun violence. It was always somebody involved, you know, but everybody, you know, they turned to different means to heal. You know, every time we lost somebody, you know, our thing was that, we have to go on and make sure it doesn't happen again. We see how it happened the first time, and then we make sure that it won't happen again, at least not that way. You know, that it might happen again, you know, a different way, but, you know, that we always look out for the families. I mean, anybody that lost a child, we supported their families in one way or another, 100%.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
And
okay. So you do you have a comment or a question?
Well, not really. No, because I was more or less listening. Go ahead.
With one question or if you have something that you would like to ask or comment.
Well,
thank you,
know,
Ms. Abdul.
I
do appreciate what you said, though. I was listening, and I do appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, I know it's difficult, especially you're a female, to lose, you know, your brother at a very young age. And him being young and you being young, he lost his life senselessly. I mean, that was really a senseless killing. Because he probably wasn't a bad, even if he was a bad kid, I mean, that's no reason to kill somebody over something minor like that. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
No,
but, you
he
know,
wasn't a bad kid. We all played childhood pranks, right? Throwing eggs. That I mean,
right,
I think it's facetious.
Right.
It's just, that's just childhood things. And unfortunately, I think our black youth are so often demonized that they can't even do things like play childhood games, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
we should be able to do some things like that without it ending in death. Because it happens other places, and nobody dies. So there also has to be a self-healing in the community where we say to ourselves,
yes.
how do we heal our children from whatever is going on that makes us want to inflict violence, right? And I think we've all been a part of that, good, bad, or indifferent.
Hmm. Well, see, yes. the neighborhood I came
and
up.
And also, we want to, when I was thinking the other day, I was like, wow, we need some more conflict resolution. So it shouldn't be, you know, self-love and conflict resolution, because it shouldn't be the first thing if someone do something
mm-hmm.
that we have to kill them or, you know, hurt them. So,
yeah.
and it comes from a lack of love, just a love for ourselves and a love for our community and people. So, yes, we, you know, you're right, Lisa, that we definitely need to, that's a good point that
yeah.
you made. But go ahead, Lisa, but, I'm sorry.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to say was if you look at the level of violence today, it's all over, it's everywhere, and it's constantly. I mean, it's every day, the killings, the shootings, the stabbings, the carjackings, every, you know, this is what people don't understand because you're not involved on this end of the government. It's a government program. They got a program called MK Ultra. It's the, what they actually doing, they have some type of device that they use over the cities, and I say the United States is using it completely over there, everywhere in the United States. It excites people to violence, and it's young, old, whatever age. It doesn't affect everyone, but it affects a lot of the masses of people, and that's why this level of violence. Because, you know, if you look at today's what's going on, you never seen this stuff before. You grew up as a kid, and this level of killing never happened before, but it's happening every day now, all over the place. It's a government program. The government is behind this whole thing. You know, that thing was discovered, I think, back in the 50s or the 60s when they first started the program, and then it was leaked out that the government was behind it. Now they perfected it. I mean, they got – that's why these kids are going wild today, killing – killing kids and killing adults.
Abdul,
hey,
because you always give us education and we appreciate it. But let me just ask Lisa, are you? We really appreciate you for being on the show. We don't want to take any more of your time, and we really thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. Any questions that you have for our listening audience or for us, we'd be happy to answer.
Yeah, no, I don't, but I just want to say thank you for the opportunity. You had amazing questions, very thoughtful, and I pray that I gave some insight. If there's ever a topic that I could come back and speak on, it would be an utter joy. You ladies are amazing. May God continue to bless you and y'all journeys and all the healing y'all are helping to do. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Lisa.
So
thank you.
Much.
Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for your contribution. All right. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Tonight.
Yes. Abdul. Okay.
Yes.
So Abdul. Now you can go, you can move on into it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, if you want, you should look it up. because they get all that on the internet now. I mean, MK Ultra is a government program they started years ago, actually in the 50s, okay, because the Germans was doing it back in the 30s. They started it in the United States. Once they captured some of the German scientists, they continued on with the program because they was going to use it in the future, you know, and they've used it on several people already, like some famous people. One of the most known persons for being involved with that is Sirhan Sirhan. If you know anything about him shooting at Robert Kennedy, he was in front of Robert Kennedy, and he was totally in the hypnotic state. And Robert Kennedy got shot in the back of the head. So, you know, you can't face somebody in the front of them and shoot them in the back of the head, and they're in front of you. You know, so that was one that worked and several others since then. But this level of violence...
Hold on. Okay, let's do this, okay? Now, the topic of this show is Heal the Inner Child to Move into Your Greatness. Okay. Now listen. No. So now you're here. Now we're going to ask you some questions on this subject. Okay. Now I want to, before I go into that, I want to put this out there. I wish I would have got the chance because I wanted to ask Lisa a question on what to do because she works with the children. You know, what can we do as lay people to, you know, where we address the youngsters, but she also made a point of being proactive. And that's how we're going to help the kids today, because a lot of stuff, there's a lot of water under the bridge now. The cows got out of the barn. So what can we do right now in order to help these children? Now, the question to you is, this is what we're talking about. Now, we're talking about healing. First and foremost, what do you say healing is for yourself, Abdul? What would you say healing is?
For me?
How would you describe it? Yeah, how would you, for you?
For my own self, you know, I mean, I've always healed my own self because I had the Most High behind me always, and he's always carried me from childhood to this present day. When I messed up, he was there to get me out of whatever trouble I couldn't get myself out of, you know, and that's an honest statement. People give me personally too much credit because I always know it wasn't me. You know what I mean? They always wondered, how was you able to do this and that? And I tell them it wasn't me. I said, the Most High got me out of this as he always does. I mean, I've been in some impossible situations, and the Most High said, okay, son, I'm going to get you out of it, but didn't you do this again? I never did the same thing twice. I'll do something else, but I won't do the same. I won't repeat the same mistake I made before. But, you know, to heal these kids, first of all, you got to be honest with yourself. These kids today are hard to reach. That's number one. Okay, they got a different type of mindset and outlook on life. They think more or less that they can do, say, and be anything they want to be in a negative fashion. You know, they've been brainwashed, and I don't know by what. See, some parents is at fault because some parents let their kids come off to them any way they want to. They let these kids talk to them any way they want to, so that problem really starts at home first. You know, where's your son at 10 o'clock at night? Where's your daughter at 10 o'clock at night? You know what I mean? Those issues ain't never answered. You know, so it starts at home with the child and the parents, and it's the parents' fault, and for the most part, when they let their kids do anything and come in the house anytime they want to come in the house, talk to them any old kind of way, you know. Years ago, I'm just going to go brief with this. You know, years ago, I had a friend of mine. Me and him grew up together. His 15-year-old son talked back to him in a very negative manner, you know, and I smacked him and knocked him down. I said, you talk to your father like that? I said, I'll do what he won't do to you. And he was shocked I did that to him. You know, and after that, he never got hit like that before, and his pop never hit him like that. After that, he became a changed person, you know.
And we want our listeners to understand that we do not promote violence.
I know. But you know, let me tell you something.
We do not promote violence.
Okay. But you know something. I know, but you know something. But that's the other thing. That's the other side of the coin. Because parents don't punish their kids today. These kids are off the hook. Yeah, if you hit me, I'm gonna call 911 on you. Yeah, go ahead. You know they know that. The government has set up a system that you can't discipline your own kids. I mean, some of these kids, they need to be beaten. They really need to be beaten. You know, when I was a kid, I expected to get beaten every day until I was 12 years old, you know, because I did stuff all the time. It didn't bother me. I mean, you know, you just wasted his time. You think that's discipline? That ain't discipline to me. I'm still going to do what I want to do. But these kids today, they go out and kill people. They go out and take things from people. They rob people. They steal people's cars. You know, and they just ransack stores. They run in there in a group of them, ransack a store and steal everything, you know, because they have no discipline at home. And some of the parents actually go along with some of the stuff because you know why? They're getting a little taste of that money. The kids out there selling drugs, and they know their son or daughter out there selling drugs. You know, and they don't do nothing about it, you know. And then these kids act up, hurt other kids, and their parents know they did this. They don't do nothing about it or say anything about it either. You know, it's like, oh, that's him being himself, you know. No, but it's no discipline at home no more. That's what the problem is. That's a real problem. See, I had daughters, three, so I wouldn't physically touch any of them. Yeah, I might grab them up. And I'd embarrass him more than anything. I curse him out all the time. You know what I mean? And that was my order to keep him straight, you know. And my kids today respect me for doing that and being that way. And if they had listened to me more, they would have been better off in life, you know. Going to college and
all
stuff
right,
like
Abdul,
that.
All right, Abdul, Hold on, Abdul. Let me just I just want to update everybody. Tonight's show is Heal the Inner Child to Move into Your Greatness. You're listening to Conversation with AA. I'm your co-host, Angela, and you're tuned in also with your host, Avon. Abdul, we just want to go into heal the inner child to move into your greatness. Avon, do you have any – because I want to go take another call and see what – so hold on for one moment. I'm going to the phone lines. We would call up 3990. Please state your name, city and state you're calling from, and question or comment that you may have. Hello, caller. You alive?
Hey, how are you guys? It's Desara.
Hello, Desara. How are you?
I am okay. How are you guys?
We're doing fine.
Absolutely.
Welcome
so you,
to the show.
Yes. You see the topic for tonight. So do you have any thoughts on what the conversation has been thus far?
It's healing the inner child, right? Am I correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. So where do I want to go with this? So for me, do I talk about personal topics or how do I go about this?
Well, however you want to come into it.
I know that I seen one of your shows. You had a show, a YouTube video, in reference to healing that you spoke profoundly about. You can go into that. You can go into what you experienced with other people. So either way, you can touch on the topic. So what's your feeling? Your innate feeling and how you feel about this?
Okay. Well, for me, I've been trying to heal starting when I turned 21. I've been playing with it for a long time because I couldn't really identify what I was trying to heal. I would say I was acting out a lot, but I couldn't really pinpoint where it was coming from. I kind of just knew I was doing what I felt like doing because I felt like doing it. And then it started showing up in my relationships is when I really noticed it. And when I left the last person I was dealing with, I really, really did some soul searching. Like, okay, something ain't right. It got to be me at this point. So what I did was, I'm like, all right, Desire, we really, really, really got to do the work. We got to do the work. We got to sit with ourselves. No dating nobody else. No sleeping, none of that. So what I did was I literally called every female in my family, from my mom to my grandmother, all my aunts, my cousins, and I had to figure out what is it that we were doing wrong, you know, and, like, why are we in the situation that we're in? Not that they intentionally were doing anything wrong to, like, raise us. They did the best that they could, but there was something that was going wrong. And when I identified what the reason was, it was just a generational thing. And I was like, okay, well, I don't want this to continue on, because if I decide to have kids, I don't want them to go through the same thing that I'm going through. You know, I was going through my dad not being there. So a lot of it was stemming really from that. Like, my childhood wasn't bad, but everything was really stemming from my daddy issues. And I realized that that was a bigger thing than I thought it was. Then when I realized that, okay, the root of it is the daddy issue, what is it? What is it? Is it him not being there? Is it the way that he talks to you? Like, what was it? You know, and I think it was understanding that the person that was supposed to be, when it comes to men, your first love and how a man is supposed to treat you, the fact that that relationship was so broken that it was mimicking everything, like how I dealt with men in my life. And then I started meeting other females that were going through the same thing, some worse than me. I thought mine was bad. And then I met other people. I'm like, well, shit, it ain't that bad, you know. And then that's where it really stemmed for me. So fast forward to present day time, I started a healing community because I kind of grown past that. And now I'm at a point where there's some things I probably don't know that are triggers for me, but it comes up when I hear other people say it. So, like, I'm healing through other people by the good parts of myself that I'm like, okay, I can help somebody with that. And then they'll probably say something. I'm like, oh, wow, that probably been bothering me too. I never said nothing about it, but because the way they're able to articulate it, it's helped me heal. So I kind of see my brain like different colors, pieces of yarn, you know? So now I'm able to, like, roll it up. Like, okay, this one's pink, this one's yellow, this one's white, this one represents anxiety, this one represents sadness, this one represents anger, you know? And it's helping me compartmentalize things that are happening in my brain so I can help other people. So that's how I've been, if that makes sense, that's how I've been healing my inner child. Like, okay, paying attention to her, you know, understanding, like, okay, this is stemming from this. Okay, you don't have to run from it. How do we fix that? Okay, you know, write it down. Sometimes I journal, but a lot of it is just talking to other people. Like, I get to meet different people daily, and I see that some people are going through things that are like, damn, well, I thought my situation was bad. I see you got it going on over here. All right. You know, and then just helping them.
What moment that really took you to that point that says, okay, something is wrong? Like, what was it, an incident, accident, or something that took you to that point to say, you know what, it's me. I got, you know, something is wrong.
Yeah, it was my ex-boyfriend, like my last situation that I was in. It was all the situations that we were going through as far as arguing. It was all too familiar, you know, and I caught myself sometimes. I would go to his mom, and I'm like, I'm about to leave him. I can't do this. And she would say things like, oh, that's just him. That's just how he is, you know. And I'm like, what? So you condoning this? You know, and then when I realized, okay, it was something that he did. I think he laughed or something when we were arguing. I'm not 100% sure what happened, but I know he triggered it for me. He triggered my healing, like, okay, I need to take a break and really focus on myself, because allowing certain things that was happening in the situation was like a huge, like, you don't see what's going on? Are you blind? You know, I had to talk to myself like that. Like, what is wrong with you? You don't see all the red flags. So basically you saying that they like a burnt orange. It's not a flaming red flag. So that's what it was for me. To really like, no, Zara, you tripping right now. You know, and I had to I had to put myself first and really remove myself from that situation because it was bad. You know, it wasn't like abuse. It was more verbally abusive and like emotional, you know, and
right.
Then you feel like you can confide in your partner about certain things and then they weaponize it against you, you know. So for me, it was all of those situations there. I didn't feel comfortable in my own house. I felt like I was walking on eggshells and, yeah, it was a lot. So that triggered me to be like, okay, you can't just keep putting up with the same. Why am I putting up with this? I don't have to put up with this. Why am I doing it, you know? And a lot of it was, I realized it was stemming from abandonment issues, feeling like less than, like you have to, or you just have to cling to somebody just because you have them. A lot of it. And when you really think about it, that stems from daddy issues. Like, well, if I don't stick with this person, this may be my only person I can get for a while. And I had to come up out of that like, girl, you tripping. Do you see you? Okay, look at you. You tripping. Get it together.
Wow. I think for women, too, it stems for cultural issues, too. Like, oh, you can't – things that we hear as we're growing up. You can't keep a man,
yeah.
Especially when it comes to relationships. You know, why you don't have a man. No man wants you. So, and I'm sure that men go through certain things too, but I'm just speaking on the behalf of the females. So would you say that it had to do with abandonment issue, a lot of fear? Was there fear in that as well?
A little bit, but what I would say is I realized, like, as a society, especially I grew up in Brooklyn and also in Staten Island too, and I feel like just as a female, period, we're always groomed to be perfect for a man, right? But we're never really groomed how to just be good individuals for ourselves, like how to properly love yourself first, you know, learning how to, like, understanding yourself, understanding when people project, understand, like being emotionally intelligent to understand when somebody's trying to emotionally manipulate you. You know, to be able to pay attention to those signs, you know, because it's sad to say, but a majority of black women have grew up without their father, or their father was present, but it still felt like they were growing up alone. You know, so you don't have that figure to guide you in the right direction. So you're kind of just out there blindly, you know, and your whole life is just prepping for a man, prepping for a man. You want to do this so you can keep a man. You want to do this for a man. And then it's like, but what about me? You know, what am I going to do to prepare for myself? Like, get my mind right for me. What about all of the things that I want to explore for myself? Like, who am I? You know, like, that's not hard enough. Like, understanding yourself, understanding how your mind works. It's just we're all geared towards trying to please men. And not that it's a bad thing, you know, because when you grow up, you know, if marriage is a thing for you, then you want to understand your partner. But I personally don't think that your whole life is supposed to be geared towards just a man. You know, it has to be geared somewhere.
You said something very important. Because first of all, if you are taught to love yourself and give yourself that love, that's the first teachings that you should be taught, because now you bring that into a relationship. And I also think is that our misunderstanding of men. If men are providers and protectors, sometimes I think that women, we look for them for too much love, too much, like in terms of the emotional side. So we expect them to be emotional, whereas maybe that's our mother side, or, you know, good points. And, you know, because men, they have different qualities, and we, a lot of times, haven't
distinguish that. So we're looking for, oh, I want my daddy to love me. I want my husband to love me the way that, you know, I need love. My girlfriends, like, why would my girlfriends do this, but my husband or my boyfriend won't do that as well? So it's a different type of love and energy that we have that we haven't been taught. You understand? So if men is supposed to be protectors and providers, they're coming from a whole different perspective than what we see. The way they see love and the way we see love is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why, right. And I think that that's the good thing to have girlfriends, like, you know, your friends, your homegirls,
mm-hmm.
your family, your female families, and have that community, because you get to vent, you get to do all those other things that you don't, that he might be weak in, or he just don't have it. You understand? So once we learn how to, once we learn that our partners, even our fathers, don't have everything that we need, then it could, and we understand the pathology of men, it'll help us navigate through our relationships a little bit better. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So
that's why it's that balance, you know, and it even goes as far as you start to see everything was by design. I heard Abdul say, the government is behind all of this, which is true. But when you really think about it, like even me, like my stepson, when he comes here, I see the different dynamic. Like he goes to dad to play rough, you know, and to get the sternness. And then for me, he comes from more of like the nurturing and when he want to be babied and all that. So it's like the healthy balance, you know, when you just have one strong of just all woman and like going into a boy, then that's a whole different story. But, you know, when you just, you're not balanced, it's not an equally yoked kind of thing, you know? So it's like, I'm so womanly, and then the woman trying to be the man at the same time. So it's like, you're giving all of these qualities that, you know, we think that's what it's supposed to be, but, you know, that's not necessarily how a man is. And does that make sense, what I'm trying to say? Like it's not balanced at all.
Let me see if I understand what you're saying. You're saying that so when it's just a woman in the household, she tries to be, and this happens with a lot with black, they try to bring on a lot of masculine, and they got their femininity, but sometimes they try to protect their children so much, right? Because there's mm-hmm. no protector and provider in the home, so they doing all of that. So now the kids, they don't get to see, you know, that love. They see it, but it's not as if the burden of just the protection of them there, and they could just focus on what they do. They don't get to see that. So then, you know, especially with females, and then they, you know, they had mothers that was really strong-minded and had to be, you know, and didn't mm-hmm. know how to balance that femininity. They never see that. So you obviously you're going to be like, where's my father? Because maybe my father could give me something different. And then when you do connect with your father, you realize, like, yo, he's just, you know, he's, like, really strong-minded, and he's not giving it to me, but he's there at least. So then you find mm-hmm. out that there's a difference even between him and your mother, you know what I'm saying, the other parent.
Yeah.
So it's a way how we were raised. It's about our culture, and it's about, you know, having both genders that can balance a child.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? That can really balance
exactly
a child. Even if,
right on head. There you go.
Right. And even if the father, like my father, he was in and out the home. You know, he was, you know, disappeared for years, came back or whatever. But I had uncles, right? So I got to see the male pathology. I had, you know, uncles, strong-minded uncles. You know, my uncles, you know, they played a big role on how I look at men. You know, they shaped that in my psyche. So that's what I was saying. But I did feel protected. I did feel provided for, you know, even though I had little traumas here and there, but it was for the most part, I felt a certain type of way. So it's a balance. You understand? And maybe even with boys now, you it was for females that's raising boys, I tell them, and I think Abdul said this one time on the show, that, you know, you get them some type of, you know, outside support, you know, we were talking about that today on the show, you know, get the outside support for these kids that they need, whether it's a mother figure. You know, some children don't have a strong mother figure. You know, I don't know if you heard about China. Her mother is going on the internet. She's going crazy.
Yeah,
okay?
She's crazy.
Her mother is, she's going crazy. So can you imagine being raised by that type of mother? So her mother, you know, is showing signs of extreme jealousy of her, you know, and just going online and talking about her, calling her names, slut buckets, and all of this stuff, even though her daughter is successful, and then, you know, but she still had this jealousy, disdain for her daughter. And this is the, this is, she said that she raised her daughter. So imagine, you know, what, instead of her saying that if I raised my daughter, I'm glad my daughter turned out to be at least someone successful, you know, let me just start me and her relationship over again. No, she didn't look at it from that point. She looked at it from envy and jealousy. I don't know. I didn't look into that totally, but I don't know if she raised her daughter or not, but I know that that's what she proclaims. So it's things like that that we, it, you know, it's good to acknowledge that when we get older about our childhood. And unfortunately, with a lot of Black families, we don't seek out help. We don't seek out counseling. We don't seek out other support as a child, because it's hard to navigate all those emotions when you are younger. You know,
you know,
who do you go talk to? And so you grow up with that pain. You grow up with that confusion. You grow up with that doubt and that, you know, abandonment issues and all kinds of, you know, different things that's taking place. So, yeah, we need to, it's good that you do recognize that, that, you know, hey, there's something going on, you know, and that's where it begins. Because our innate emotions and feelings is more pure. So anything that contradicts that, that's where it comes up. And that's a good thing. It's like, you know, people look at sickness as bad, but if your body don't get sick, how would you know if something is wrong? So your body actually is not trying to hurt you. Your body is saying, listen, I'm throwing up because you put something in my body that's poisonous to my body. I need help. Mm-hmm. So even with these emotions, these negative emotions, that's emotions that's showing us that we need a different positive mindset. We need to change our mindset. We need to heal. We need to be on a different journey. We need to, you know, find out what's going on, what's wounded inside of us. These are symptoms of the wounded, you know? So it's a good thing that that you recognize that. What are some of the things that you do on a daily basis? What's some of the things that you integrate in your journey of healing on a daily basis and daily routines? Because we hear that a lot. Like, people like, how you do it? Okay, so what are you supposed to do if I wake up and I'm not fit? You know, what do you do on your daily journey and your daily life routines and journey?
Well, first, I think people overcomplicate what healing actually is. I think it has become a cliche, and I think people are trying to make it like a trend instead of a lifestyle. And to understand what healing is really just identifying the problem within you and then coming up with a solution, just to simplify it. That's really all it is. And for me, what I do is, when I wake up in the morning, I do a thing called meditating, praying. It's two different things. So when I'm praying in the morning, before I talk to anybody, before I even look at my phone, I'm praying. I'm talking to God. And then that's about for like 10, 15 minutes. I do a thing called Thanksgiving. I'm not talking about like actual Thanksgiving. I'm giving thanks for all of the little things. And then I meditate. I sit still for a second, and then I let God talk to me. Sometimes he doesn't answer right away, and sometimes it takes days for me to get the answer that I'm looking for, but I always end up getting the answer through somebody else. You know, somebody come and talk to me, and it's like, that's crazy. I was literally just saying that the other day, or I pray for that, or, you know, I was asking God for that. And then I read, and then I spend time alone. So my healing has been, I realized that I suffer from low self-esteem, and a lot of it was only things about myself, nothing really that anybody else said. So, you know, we're our biggest critic. So I work out every day. and just getting the body, my body back that I had in high school. I'm getting it back to where it's at now. It actually looks even better, might I add, but I work out every day.
Pardon you.
Because I'm growing into my grown woman body, you know. My high school body, I was little, I was tiny. But my grown woman body is shaping out now. So now I'm shaping it the way that I want it to look. You know, and then I just really feed my mind. And I know that something my whole life has been pushing me, and I know it just hasn't been me by myself. So I know that there's a source, and I don't really correlate it to religion. It's more so my journey, my spiritual walk. And, you know, I see that, and I give myself more positive, you know, I do positive affirmations too, but my thing is really feeding myself and listening to the word. I'm actually getting ready to start going back to church, but I listen to a lot of God things. And in the morning, me and Myron, my fiance, we read scriptures in the morning. I have him read it because I know for him, he's more of a speaker. So I do it for him so he can say it out loud. And then me, I'm more of the receiver. So I'm more on my walk, you know, and I got rid of all of the toxic things that are in my life. And I really just focus on understanding who I am, because I'm like, my purpose is, where is it? What is it? Am I doing the right thing? I don't know. But I know it's wrapped up in understanding myself. So the more I do that, it'll reveal itself. So that's pretty much what I do.
Wow. That's profound. That's good. That's good. Abdul, you have anything, any questions to Zahra? Abdul, we lost you. All right. Avon, you have any more questions?
No, I'm here.
No.
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead, Abdul.
Oh, no, I was going to say, does she enjoy herself as a person?
I love myself. I have so much fun by myself that it's scary. I got to be around people more. That's what I've been hearing. I love solitude.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes if you feel that way about yourself, that's a good thing. And I feel that way about myself because I'm always, you know, I'm always in the up mode. And nothing brings me down. You know, my kids come to me for their problems. I just give them advice. I don't get involved. You know, because I ain't never had to go to my parents for nothing. You know, I was glad they was there for support if I needed them for something. But I try to deal with it myself. I ain't want to bring my troubles to my parents. I always wanted to handle it my own self. But if you feel that way about yourself, that's a good thing. You know, and the other thing is you should always rely on yourself first before you even attempt to go to somebody else. You know,
yeah.
If you feel as though something is with you, then, you know, look for your inner self to try to resolve that situation yourself before you go to somebody else.
Absolutely.
You can find the answer. You know, you are your own answer. You know, another person can only give you their idea or opinion, but you always got it right there, yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to add on to that, sometimes she said something very important. She said that sometimes she would pray, she would hear it through other people. She would get answers through other people, and that's the whole thing too. It's not about that you don't need no one. Sometimes people spark those questions.
Right.
That energy in you to say, you know what, I need help. Because sometimes you might not know how to start on that journey. You might not know what to do. You might not even know what's wrong, but you know something is wrong. And that's when you seek someone that can actually help get that out of you. Not that you need someone, but, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where you're saying, okay, I could do it myself, and then you're not making any positive results. Because just like, you know, alcoholics, they wasn't able to do it on their own. Some people are stronger than others, and sometimes you need that support to build you up, and then you're able to do that. So it depends on what you build from. It's like the three little pigs. One had a straw house, the other had a sand house, and the other one had a brick house. The wolf wasn't able to pull down the brick house. But you notice they kept building until they built a brick house. So sometimes you might start off with that straw house, and that straw house, the big bad wolf come, and the big bad wolf could represent, you know, pain. The big bad wolf could represent molestation and childhood drama and, you know, rape and all kinds of things, you know, being locked up and all these things that the big bad wolf could represent. So you get knocked down, and then you build a sand house, and you get knocked down from that. And then finally on your journey, you build to a point where you just, no matter what the outside forces is able to do, you're able to withstand that. So, you know, so, and I understand what you're saying too, Abdul, that look for it in yourself, but sometimes I'm not saying that, you know, you shouldn't do that. You should. But sometimes I also understand that there's some people who just don't have it in them. And that's why that's what you should have, a strong family support. And if you don't have a strong family support, you should have mentors and a coach or some type of, you know, therapy. Even therapy, if you get good therapy, that, you know, someone you can connect with just to bring that out of you, just to bring that, you know, to get you to that aha moment of realizing that, yo, I need help, and maybe this is going on in me. And then that's when you can begin your journey.
Exactly. And I want to build on that, because you know what? I want to preface all of this by saying we're all in this together. So we're not out here by ourselves, you know, on an island. We got to work together. This is part of the reason why we find ourselves as a people, you know, in the situation, in the state that we're in. So we're not out here by ourselves. Now, you said some things, and I'm going to back into it because I'm going to connect it with what Zara had said as well. Now, like Angela said, yes, eventually you want to get to the point. That's the point that we're working towards, where we take accountability and know that we have it within ourselves. We have all the tools that we can, and we need to know that we can get the answers for ourselves. We know where to look, who to connect up with, and to observe all those things. But as Andrew says also, it's not that people that just can't do it, that right now they got so much going on that they cannot see this for themselves. But they have the tools. They're just not aware of it and don't know how to connect to that. Now, you said, Abdul, and I don't think that you're the only one. There's a lot of men that think this way, that, you know what, I'm going to do it on my own. I'm going to do things my way. Yeah, I've got my parents there, whatever, but I ain't asking them for nothing. I don't want to do this and that. But you know what? Sometimes what I hear in that also, before I say that, I want to ask you this question. Do you think, because you have that mindset, that possibly that you may have a disconnect? Like, say, sometimes when your kids come to you, oh, I just give advice. I don't get involved. I just give advice or whatever. But sometimes, not to say that you necessarily will give the emotional support, but that you find yourself, do you think that you're closed off to some extent, that you may not be able to see or be aware? Or we may be talking about in the past when they were younger. They're grown adults now. But can you see that? Maybe that thinking might have, you know, might
make
have
me the way I am.
Resistance. You know, for as far as kids, I'm saying that there might be, you might have distanced yourself, and you may not think that your children needed that way, but your children might have needed that or a little bit more. Or, like, I know you wanted to foster the sense of get it on your own, you can do this, whatever, you don't need me, whatever. But do you think maybe that you might have been more involved, or do you think that everything was fine? I don't know. I'm just asking. This is the question that I'm asking you.
Well, as they were when they were children, I always supported them 100%. But once they became adults and was out the house, I can't do that anymore. You know, they have to find themselves, and they have to find strengths within them. I mean, they had my parents to always tell them how difficult it was for them as my parents to deal with a child like I was to them. You know, I was the worst type of child you would ever want to have. You wouldn't want to have me as a child, first of all. And my parents always relayed that to them. And the way I raised my kids was different because they wasn't difficult children. But I never wanted my kids to rely on me for nothing once they was adults. No, when they're children coming up, you teach them to be themselves and to rely on themselves, but let them know that mommy and daddy is always there to support them. Now, when their mother left, I had to raise them by myself, and I had to change things because it's different when a man has to raise female children. You know, the mom was always around. That wasn't no problem there. You know, she could come and go as she wants, but she didn't live there no more. And my daughters felt a certain way about, I'm trying to think of the right way to say it. They felt like they knew they couldn't go with their mother, okay, because they felt that they knew their mother could not afford to take care of them. I mean, that's really what it boiled down to. They knew that. So they had no intentions. When the mom said she was leaving, they put their heads down and said, you know, more or less, we can't go with you. They didn't say that, but they put their heads down, and that answered her question about who they wanted to live with. They know living with me, and I hate to say this, but I mean, living with me was a better deal than going with their mom, and they knew that. Their mom,
because,
I don't want to say this.
Because
their mom was a minimum wage worker, okay? And,
okay.
I was born up.
Hold on. You know what? Yeah. But listen, I want to hold you there because I don't want to skip past things. Okay, so
okay.
Her mother was a minimum wage
worker.
But
yes.
You two were their parents. And aren't you working together? So it wouldn't matter what their mother was, but you're there to support also on the financial side of things. So it would it matter if they went on to stay with their mother if you were giving them that support from your end?
They didn't even want to do that. They knew they had it too good with me to go with her. I mean, that's basically what it boiled down to. You know, and they knew as a parent, I was a stronger parent than she was. She was, my kids would drive her crazy, and they wouldn't do that to me. You know what I mean? They played games with her like I played with my parents. They did the same thing in a different way. They played with her, and they, you know, I did it facetiously to my parents, purposely, you know, and they played games with her all the time, you know, and they knew, you know, sometimes kids, when you bring them up a certain way, you give them certain things, they can do certain things, and we always out. See, 3 days a week, Monday, Friday, Wednesday, and Friday, I took my kids to the movies. No matter what the weather was, they was going to the movies, having a good time. Summertime, I take them to Great Adventure, amusement parks, and all this kind of stuff. So I did stuff with them all the time. And like when before my kid's mom came home, dinner was already cooked because I get home first. You know, I get off work at 3 o'clock, so I'm already home. So I cook for the kids and all this kind of stuff. Then when she come in, she just eat. You know, see, she had less to do than most women, coming home, cooking and cleaning and all that stuff. She ain't had to do all that stuff because I had all that stuff done already. So she had it
so
easy
allegedly,
to think.
Something went wrong, and she only had that to do.
Well, see, the wrong way. She
allegedly,
won, yeah, she. Oh, no, I'll tell you what was wrong.
Why did she want to get the hell out of Dodge and
because I'm going to tell you I'm going to tell you. She wanted another child, and I said no. You know, nobody tells me what they want. She wanted another child, and I just straight out said no. You know, I ain't giving her no explanation, no, because I said no, and that was it. You know, she wanted another child, and I said, no, she wanted a son. I said, I don't want no son. You crazy? That'd be the worst thing I'd ever have is a son biologically by me. Oh, no, I ain't want that. You know,
but
because
you didn't
I
even
felt
touch
so,
yourself, right?
You know, because, see, I don't want no son being like I was when I'm to my parents because I ain't going to put up with that stuff, you know? I put my parents through hell purposely because they was always trying to tell me
what
to do.
You was afraid, that's another show, that you was afraid that the son would turn out like you.
He would be, had that attitude, and I ain't need that, you know, not turn out like
do
me.
Do you believe,
had that attitude.
Let me ask you this, Abdul,
yes.
Abdul, do you think a lot of black men feel like way about having, when they have
no,
that,
no,
fear,
no.
Of, that fear,
no.
Of,
no, because, you know, I can honestly say that most males that have male children, their sons don't turn out like I was when I was a kid. See, I resented, I love my parents, but I resented the fact that these people keep telling me what to do all the time. I really didn't like that, you know, and people say, well, wait a minute, they're your parents, they're supposed to tell you what to do. I know, but I didn't like it. You know, I just didn't like them telling me what to do. You know, so, no, but most people I know, they didn't have the same type of relationship with their sons like I had with my parents because I put them through trauma. You know, if my parents was alive, they'd tell you stories that never end. You know what I mean? And, you know, one day when I was injured, my father was up at the hospital with me crying because I'm hurt. I said, Dad, you up here crying because I'm hurt? I said, come on, man. I said, you can't be doing this. I said, you're making me feel bad now. I'm the one injured, and you're up here crying about it. I said, your son is going to be your son no matter what. I said, I'll get through this. I said, don't worry about it. You know? See, my mom ain't come up there. She's, yeah, what?
I want to just ask, Abdul, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I just want to ask Zazara. Zazara.
I think her call dropped. That's, I think the call dropped.
Oh,
I'll
okay.
See if I can
oh,
get a hold
said,
of her.
Okay, because I wanted to ask her one thing. Okay, I'm sorry about that. All right. Okay.
No, but, you know,
Avon?
People.
Yeah, I'm there.
Oh, but mm-hmm. People, you know, don't really address their kids as the child that they are. You know, when you got a bad kid, you got to address that kid as a bad kid. You can't make him a good kid because he's going to be a bad kid. But, you know, there's a limit to every child as to what they will do and what they won't do. You know what I mean? And my father said to me one day, Junior, why you always got to hang with the bad kids? When he said that, I just stood there for a minute. I said, is he really saying that? I said, Dad, you told me this, birds of a feather flock together. So if I hang with the bad kids, what did that say about me? And I ended that conversation and walked out the door. You know, see, every child that grows up and do bad things while they're growing don't turn into a bad person as an adult. A lot of people don't understand that. It's a growing process. You don't let a child
do
you, your house now.
Do you think these children, they need healing, being that the show is
oh
about
my
healing?
God.
Did you say that they need healing?
No. What they need is direction and supervision, parents. They do not need healing. No, no. They need discipline. You know, this is the problem with the kids today. They have no discipline at home. Mom and dad, whether mom's there by herself or not, mom and dad needs to discipline these kids. You can't do it physically no more, but you got to find something, some way to get to them that's going to affect them so to try to keep them on the right path. And today, unfortunately, you got to keep them or try to keep them away from other bad kids. Cause these kids
But what about things that goes on in their lives in the household that they have seen, they have witnessed, that they are suffering through or they going through that may cause them, not in your situation, though, because you're mm-hmm. looking at – you're looking at your situation as, okay, your situation is unique, you know. So not every – most people have childhood traumas. They can remember, oh,
yeah,
when I was growing up, I didn't get enough cake to eat, and I didn't get these new sneakers that my best friend had, and my sisters got – and my brothers got everything, and I was didn't get nothing. And they can – they have a whole list. And these things, they grow up with this mentality. I mean, this is huge in terms mm-hmm. of healing and trauma, with, you know, when you're young. So would you say that some of these kids, or even kids that you considered bad, like when you was just doing stuff, what was your, you, why did you feel like you needed to rebel? It was something there. Like, you felt like you didn't have enough freedom. Did you feel fear? Was you, you know, scared? Was you, you know, something was there that you didn't trust? Did you trust? You had trust issues with your parents? Maybe they said one thing and did something else. Like, it was something there that evoked these emotions from
but
you.
But the problem,
or
yeah,
that behavior.
But the problem, yeah, but the problem I had with my parents, they was always on my case. I mean, you know, like, I wasn't the only child at home. They had four kids, and why were they concentrating on me all the time? That's what the problem was. You know, why is Junior got to do everything? You want Junior to do everything? What, you got three daughters? Get them to do stuff. Leave Junior alone. You know, that's the attitude I had. You know, that they was always on my case. But, you know, truthfully, as an adult, they was doing the right thing. With the child I was, they were trying to get me on the right path, and that was an impossibility. That was impossible to do, you know, because I was determined that no matter what they do to me, I'm going to do whatever I want to do, because it's my life.
What made you turn around from that? What made you say, what was that turning point where you just like, nah, I can't do what I want to do? Or did you, you know, did you face some type of legality or something that made you stop? Like something, because you here to talk about it today.
Well,
so something happened.
Or even the question of, did he turn around? Did you turn around? We assume that he did.
Well, see,
did you change?
Well, see. Oh, well, let me tell you. When I got 17 years old, I was waiting to graduate from high school and waiting to graduate from computer school so I can go to college and get out of the gang. I was waiting to get out. You know, I was in the gang since 7 years old, so that was 10 years I was in the gang. You know, and
wait,
I was waiting to get out.
Wait, hold on. When was you? Okay, you was in the gang at 7 years old?
Yes.
Oh, Lord.
Yes. Yeah, that's when you get recruited.
Where was your parents or something?
Your parents, let me tell you something. I came up in North Philly. Your parents cannot stop you from the gang stuff. All they can do is tell you the dangers of being in a gang, the possibility of you getting killed for being in the gang, or severely injured for life being in the gang. They can't stop you. They can't be with you 24/7. You know, like when my father talked to me, because my mother was done with me, really, because she said, you know, it was a waste of time her trying to talk to me, so she was done talking to me. But my father said, Junior, do you know the dangers you put yourself into? I said, yeah, of course, Dad. He said, well, you think I'm stupid? I said, you know, I do this because I want to. And I said, one day when Dink retire, I'm going to run it myself, and I'm going to run it as a business and not as a gang no more. And that was the mentality I had.
What gang are you a part of now?
Gang
S-B-I-D-I-C.
Now? I work for the Department of Homeland Security. I'm a contractor for them. I'm not an agent. I catch cyber criminals. I just sent y'all the email the other day about this guy I just caught. I was tracking him for 2 years and couldn't catch him. Normally,
but you did. You did say you was going to turn it into a profession. You did say that.
You're doggone right.
So you part of a gang? That's kind of like a gang.
Homeland Security,
the government side. Okay.
Homeland Security.
So you still
FBI,
got that gang
CIA.
Mentality.
Yes, I always have that. I mean, I have my own organization in New York because you know why?
Okay,
I don't live up there. We have a business organization, and it stems out of Brooklyn, you know, and I'm the head of that.
Okay.
You know, we don't like to say that, but that's the way it is. And it works, you know.
So you turn
all
it
the
into,
legitimate
you
businesses.
So you transmute that energy. You transmuted it instead of being a gang of the Crips, Blood, or whatever. You just Homeland Security now.
That criminal
organization. Thank you for your contribution. We're about to wind down now, everyone. We'd like to thank everyone for your comments or your support. Thank you for chiming in. It's been definitely an informative show. Tonight's show, once again, was Heal the Inner Child to Move into Your Greatness. And keep following us on Instagram and Twitter at Conversations with AA. and you can go there to keep updated on our new information that we put out and new videos and everything. So, Avon, do you have anything to say?
Well, yes, I want to thank all of our guests, and it was very insightful, and you know, the different ways that healing shows up in everyone's life. And, oh, there's so many more questions. And, see, you start out, it seems like you have so much time, and then next thing you know, we're racing down to the wire. So it's right. Good. So this is going to be an ongoing conversation. We're going to continue it, and we're going to have because these are series. It's not a one-shot deal, and that's the end of it, you know. So we still have the men, how you're showing up. We're going to have more coaches, psychologists, captains of industry, people from all walks of life coming and contributing, you know, and helping us navigate this path, this journey that we got going on here. So, you know, again, I appreciate everybody that was on the line. I appreciate you. The Zara had dropped off the line, so I can get her information later. But do you want to share your information on your group so that people can
I wanted to ask because it's funny that I asked my daughter something yesterday. Was it yesterday or day before yesterday? And I said, you know, do you have any childhood trauma? And she was like, no. I'm like, did that do anything that traumatized you? You know, because her and her father and I are divorced. So, you know, I wanted to know how she felt about that. I remember when she cried that he moved away from, you know, from the city, and that affected her. She cried. But I asked her, I said, what's going on there? Because I know when they was little, I was going through a lot of stuff happened to me. And I was going through some trauma, and I had to go through healing while raising a child as a mother. So I wanted to know, like, I always kept, because Zara mentioned something. She mentioned that she would want that generational thing that goes on in many families.
Right.
She wouldn't want that to happen. So I was always aware of that. Like, I wouldn't want to put pressure, you know, and trauma on my children. I know I was kind of like a hard type of mother. I was like more like a tiger mom. Like, I wanted them to succeed. So I kind of did the opposite. Like, I didn't want them just to settle. I always wanted them to push hard, to believe in themselves, to be go-getters. And so, you know, I asked her, I said, do you suffer from childhood trauma? And I ask my children all the time, like, you know, what did I do? Let's get this out now, because I'm not trying to hear no conversation. You know, when you turn 30 and 40, you can come to my mom, you did this to me. We need to get this out now. Like, let's get this going now. Let's get it out now while y'all young. So I have a chance of turning it on, if anything, you know, because I'm sure, you know, family, I don't heard it in my family, you know. The mother, you know, the people say that they mother did this, and everyone's like, what? They did, you know, I don't want my kids to do that. So I learned from hearing other people stories, and as a life coach, I have heard other people's stories. So one of the things that I do as a life coach, when I hear other people's stories, I, like, you know, I apply it to my life, or I ask questions. It makes me think as well. And that's a great thing about being, you know, in your field. So I asked her, and she was like, no. I said, you sure, like, the breakup, do you need counseling? I'm always asking her that anyway. So she's like, no. I'm like, therapy, no. So it was a good thing to hear that. You know, it was a relief to hear that. But I wanted to tell Zara this. She said when she have kids, right, what can she do? And I wanted to share something what I did. One of the things that I did was I always was conscious of my childhood traumas and what I've been through, and not to pass it on to my children. Like, that, I was always conscious of that. Like, so I would be hard, and then I'll be loving, and then I would, you know, so I came with, as a mother with various type of personalities, honey, connected, disconnected, all kinds of emotions, my children and witness. So, and I don't know if that has something to do with my sign as a Gemini. I don't know. Avon, don't mention that.
Don't get me up in this mess.
As Geminis, we can do that. But, yeah, so it's time to log off, and I really appreciate you, Abdul, for sharing, you know, your contribution. And until next time, peace and blessings to everyone, to all our listeners. Definitely hit us up on Instagram. Stay connected on Twitter and Instagram for us. We really appreciate